I'd like to convene the Finance Committee. We do have a quorum present. Representative Benson, have you studied the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes of March 9th.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We're going to deviate a little bit on the agenda. We're going to take House File 2562, which is about in the middle of your packet, by Representative Thiessen first. Representative Thiessen, in the absence of Representative Huntley, would you care to move the division report?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move the Health Care and Human Services Finance Division Report for House File 2562, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Thiessen?
I move House File 2562, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Now, we do have an amendment. Do you want to add the amendment before you present the bill to put it in the form you'd like?
I would, Mr. Chair. So I'd move the A3 amendment.
Okay, Representative Thiessen moves the A3 amendment.
And, Mr. Chair, it's just to get the bill in the order to that I'd like it. I can explain what it does.
It just changes some dates.
Changes some dates.
Okay. Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen, we were just handed a letter from the Minnesota Medical Association in support of this legislation. Does the amendment change their support or not?
It does not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion to approve the A3 amendment is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Thiessen on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill addresses COBRA insurance, so people that lose their job, you know, they can continue to buy at full price the insurance that they had previously had. Last year, the federal government passed legislation that provided a 65% COBRA match. So people that lost their job, at least 65% of the premiums would be covered by the federal government. And in our Health and Human Services conference report last year, we included a 35% COBRA match to kind of make up the difference. So now it would be a 100% match for a period of 9 months. But the state program is only for individuals who qualify for public programs. And the rationale there was it actually saved us money in the general fund because we're paying for this out of the healthcare access fund, and it prevents people from going on to our public programs because they're staying on their private insurance. The federal government has extended the federal match in two ways. One, just in terms of when you lose your job, and secondly, from 9 months to 15 months. And the department and what the amendment did was there's actually been two extensions, and so this amendment is kind of catching up with the federal government extensions, and that's why we changed the dates in the amendment. But the general gist of the bill is to change our state law just to match up for the same period of time. And so the money piece of it is that we did, as I said, we saved money in the general fund because fewer people went into our public programs paid for out of the general fund, and we paid for these subsidies out of the health care access fund. The appropriation in last year's Health and Human Services bill over-projected uptake and costs, so we actually spent less. So what this bill is doing is using part of the unspent money to pay for the extension and then returning the rest of the money that is unspent to the general fund, and that's why you see a savings on the bottom line in the fiscal note. So what this bill basically does is it allows people who would qualify for a public program, so poor and kind of lower and middle class Minnesotans who lose their job, to actually get their health care covered so they don't get the double whammy of kind of losing their job and losing their health care. And it keeps people in the private market as opposed to coming onto our public programs.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Thiessen removes his renews his motion that House File 2562, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now go back to the First bill on the agenda, House File 2690 by Representative Sertich. And Representative Sertich, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You have one time served on this committee.
I sure did.
Mr. Chairman.
Let's see. This one has been to, yes, Representative Kahn's division. Representative
Kahn. I'd like to move the State Government Finance Division Report, the House File 2690, the first committee in Brestwood.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Kahn.
Then I move House File 2690, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Sertich on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Members, before you is House File 2690. This is a bill dealing with reductions in spending in state government. Members, in tackling the billion-dollar budget deficit this year and the ongoing deficit into the future, we've all talked about making priorities and prioritizing our funding in state government. And so I took the task and actually worked with state employees and other individuals in finding areas of reductions in state government. I believe that will be helpful in balancing the budget. It's a small number. If you look at $1 billion, this in savings this year will save around $6 million, but on into the future $15 million per budget cycle. And it does basically three things. It reduces the expenditures of state contracted services, particularly for out-of-state companies. In these tough economic times, I think we should rein in our spending in jobs for out of the state of Minnesota and maintain a higher priority for Minnesota companies. Second, it prohibits out-of-state travel except for when it's the core mission of a state agency. That would save us millions of dollars. In these tough economic times, again, folks can pick up a phone, email, or be on their computers instead of flying all over the country and the world, saving state dollars for other priorities. And third, elimination of managerial positions, reduction of assistant deputy commissioners and political appointees. All in all, I believe saving money so that we can fund our higher priorities. And I basically put it this way. I would rather fund education, fund a teacher, fund a nurse, fund a police officer, a firefighter, than fund political appointees. And so this is, I think, just putting our priorities in order. And that last, those last millions of dollars, when you get to the end of the session, when you're talking about what cuts need to be made, are the most difficult. And I think these would be easier cuts than what we're looking at coming forward in potentially education or health care. And with that, I stand for questions.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Sertich. On the last part of the bill, I noticed that your main reductions were all in agencies or the governor's office, and there were no recommendations that I see here. I noticed Department of Education specifically and some of these other things, but what about the other executive offices of the state of Minnesota? We have Attorney General, Secretary of State, and State Auditor. I noticed there's nothing that I see here. Maybe you can clarify that.
Sure.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, I did a lot of work between committees when you asked this question, and you know, the other constitutional officers already took cuts in bills that we've passed. Also, the other constitutional officers actually have specific functions that are mandated by our Constitution, and so we didn't go there for additional cuts. The other thing that I've learned in going through this process is the governor's office actually has the ability to charge back state agencies and basically allows for the governor's office to have a bigger foothold in government because they can pay for their administrative staff from different state agencies. So that's really what I wanted to focus on with this bill.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Sertich, that actually was one of the questions I wanted to ask. But why, instead of going after specific positions, why not cut salaries across the board? Why just pick a few appointees? And I understand the political part of that, but it seems like there'd be a lot more savings generated if we would make this more above across the board instead of just picking on a few political appointees and only one of the constitutional offices. It seems very, very partisan to me. I'm just wondering why you didn't go across the board.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, for the reasons I just stated, the other constitute offices have mandated services that they must do by our state constitution. They can't do that chargeback provision where, you know, we've seen in the past where the governor has used, for example, a veterans fund to fund somebody in his position on veterans licenses and others. Other constitutional officers don't have that ability to manipulate our state agencies quite like that the governor's staff can. The other reason, in going in specific positions, for example, the governor has two deputy chiefs of staff. We didn't tell him which one, but we think in these tough economic times, he can live with one deputy chief of staff. The other reason in doing this right now, I think, is important, and I don't see this as partisan or political, is we're going to have a new governor, and I think the new governor, whoever it may be, will have to live with less staff. This is, I think, a perfect time to go in there and get rid of some of the political appointees, former legislators, other candidates for office, and just get rid of some of them so that the next governor coming forward just starts with less staff, therefore saving the state millions of dollars.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sertich. I guess that was sort of the question, but I think more specifically, why just the managerial positions? Why not the worker positions? The vast majority of the budget in those areas is in state employees, and why not in the workforce overall? Because it seems like you could make a small change there that would save much more in the long run in dollars. And I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't make any managerial changes. I'm just wondering why not spread it out and go a little further.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, I believe in the collective bargaining process where the administration negotiates with the labor unions, and they did so, and they actually negotiated a freeze in salaries. And I believe in that process, and we shouldn't interfere in that as a state legislature.
Okay, Representative Paymar.
I'm curious about, I'm just trying to understand the fiscal note here, and specifically the Section 4 of the bill that's reducing the technical, professional and technical contracts by $4 million. And I guess I just don't understand what's being stated here in the fiscal note about the five agencies that are getting reductions. Can you just clarify that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, I just received this fiscal note late last night, and in reading it this morning, it talks about some assumptions that the department made and where the cuts would be. We certainly did not put any of that into the bill. It will be these assumptions were made by the fiscal staff, and those percentages shown aren't anywhere in the bill, so that doesn't necessarily need to be how it goes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sturdivant, in other words, when I see a 35% cut to professional contracts to the Department of Corrections, what am I to assume as the chair of that committee?
Sure.
Representative Sturdivant.
Mr. Chair and Chair Paymar, you can assume that the folks that put together this fiscal note made the assumption that that's where the cuts would come from, but that doesn't necessarily need to be the case.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Sertich, it seems to me before we vote on a bill that we'd like some answers to some of the assumptions.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Marks wanted to help respond, if that's all right, Representative Sertich. Mr.
That'd
Marks.
Be very helpful.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, members, on page 3 of the fiscal note, just below the middle of the page under assumptions is what Representative Paymar is referring to. What's stated in the fiscal note is that these are where the current professional technical contracts are, and that 35% of those are in corrections, 16% human services, 12% education, 9% revenue, 6% public safety, and that accounts for 78% of the professional technical contracts. The bill does not specify that that's how the reductions have to be made, but the information provided here is that's where the contracts currently are.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know if I'm belabor the point here, but then I would make assumptions that based on that calculation that the Department of Corrections, rightly or wrongly, will receive a 35% reduction in their professional contracts. And I don't know if anyone from the department is here would like to speak to it. We just went over some painful negotiations with the Department of Corrections over their budget, and some of these contracts, I think, are necessary for the department, and I don't know, I feel a little uncomfortable with this language. Mr. Marks, do you have anything you want to...
Mr. Marks. Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, I don't have the number with me. It's that corrections represents 35% of the professional technical contracts. The number I'm missing is 4 million is what percent of the total professional technical contracts. And I can get that number. I don't have it with me
Mr. Chair, this is going through a process, and I'll wait, but I'd like some answers to this question.
Mr. Chair, I have that answer. Mr. Chair and Chair Paymar, this would be a 4.4% cut to overall state contracts. And it also makes the point that in-state contracts would have preference. So I'm assuming a lot of the contracts and corrections are with in-state companies. I think one of the biggest, newest, glaring examples of where we could cut a contract is in the Department of Education's application to Race to the Top. Chair Greiling saw this out, where this company from New York did our Race to the Top application. So we paid a New York company a bunch of money to do a contract, and they did it poorly. We would much rather spend that money either in Minnesota or have our Department of Education, the legislature, and other experts in Minnesota doing that work. So Representative Paymar, I see that being where we would look to cut first, and not existing contracts with Minnesota companies like I think most in corrections are.
Okay, Representative Kahn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members, I think I have an answer to Representative Pepin's questions about why not do it across the board, or why not, or why go from the top. You can think, somewhere in my piles of papers over the year, I actually have a public policy paper on this. You can think of state government as two kinds of triangles. One is a triangle like this, where the base is the big, broad base of employees, and the top are the people on the top. Now, if you want to look at the salaries of those people, that triangle is totally reversed, with the highest salaries are all on the top, and the lowest salaries are all on the base. There was one point where we required, when we were doing cuts, we required cuts to be a proportional slice down the side. But one of the problems that you get into about the decisions to fire people is that, and this is not imagined, this is this has been studied in public policy papers, is that people don't fire the people that they have coffee with. And the people they have coffee with are the people kind of adjacent to them as you go down that that list. So left to their own devices, with the people would more likely to be fired across the bottom, which requires many more people to be fired for a much smaller return. This was also shown at the university with the proposal of the kind of cut that would be taken, where the people at the top took a slightly higher cut than the people at the bottom. I might say this was ratified by the university Senate, with my husband being one of the 26 minority people who voted for the people at the top to take a much bigger cut. Shows that he's been well trained, at least. But the but anyway, that's kind of the reason. It's to get rid of the cup of coffee syndrome in terms of firing, and the fact that you get much more in effect by going across the top than you do across the bottom.
Representative Kiffmeyer. Or Representative Pepin, did you want to...
Yes, thank you for that. Did you have an explanation, too, as to why just the governor's office and agencies, and why not do the same thing across the other constitutional officers and be
because, and
prescriptive?
I think that, Mr. Chairman, that was explained by Representative Search. There are very few people who do not have specifically defined jobs. And this was shown by, in our bill, from state government finance in the auditor's office, we had to delay something that's really nice to do, which is electronic reporting of investment returns from all the local units of government. And the reason we had to do that was because cuts that we've made to the general fund portion of the auditor's office, which is tiny meant that they have not been able to fill the position that was required to put that in that into place. So we had to, I don't remember the exact numbers, we either had to, you know, as you remember, these wonderful negotiations with our counterparts in the Senate, but we had to add that language, the language that delayed that, you know, which they were saying was pure policy. What we were able to show was that the language that delayed the implementation of that requirement, if we didn't do it, required about $180,000 additional appropriation to restore the position. So those very small number of positions, very specific, and so it's just not, there isn't really any general comparison to executive agencies. I must say, for all the people who are so anxious to cut, my one attempt to make, which I'm sure would be very happily taken on by the populace, my one attempt to cut the executive branch, i.e. by eliminating the lieutenant governor, which clearly has one function, to wake up in the morning and see if the governor is still alive, we were not able to pass that in the government operations committee. So I'm always interested in all these people who want to cut government, and yet when given a very specific, totally harmless cut, vote no. I don't know if they all intend to be lieutenant governor. I've already had one offer for that position, which I declined.
Emery, you're still
just as a reminder to the committee on both sides of the aisle, House File 1671, that I happen to have been the chief author of, cut $312 million, almost $313 million, if I recall correctly, and $207 million of that, if you factor out the $105 million that was aid to cities and counties, were cuts to state agencies. So when the question comes up, were there other cuts? Yes, there were, and that included the constitutional officers receiving reductions as well. So Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think that nicely leads into what I was going to say, is that when in a constitutional office with under Governor Ventura and then Governor Plenty, we had a series of reductions, 1%, 2%, 5%, and then 15%. 15%. And it was significant. And I do agree with you that, you know, you're elected, so you're there, but doing without an executive secretary, using student workers, and then making sure that those were steps down is a very appropriate way to do things. But that was 15%. Now you're looking at a 3%, which I look at, and you compare the recession that we're in now compared to then. I mean, you're being extremely gentle. But I also do believe in allowing the entities to have flexibility as to making some of those cuts so that they're able to make those decisions. So I'm more of a lump sum amount or something so that you can allow them to make those choices. I mean, your goal should be financial. Let them make more determinations in regards to who. But I think that easily, if we could have taken those sequences in 15%, I just don't think that only going to the governor or agencies and not tapping more into the other constitutional officers is really valid. I don't agree with that argument, and you've proven as a legislature before you didn't either. So I disagree with Representative Sertich in the way these are being done, but I do agree with the overall goal of making those reductions, and they should be all the way through. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
You know, Representative Kiffmeyer, you bring a unique talent to both our committee, our specific committee, and the legislature as a whole in your experience of 8 years as the Secretary of State. And one of the things I would urge you to do is to do an in-depth survey of the current Secretary of State's office. Go down there, analyze all of the positions, and tell us which of the ones it would be appropriate to eliminate. We would be very pleased to listen to your advice on that.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the current Secretary of State should be, as I said, have some discretion and managerial discretion in regards to what they need. I think what you did before was a percentage and allowed the discretion of the office to implement it, and I stand by that. So I don't think it is our job as a legislature in dealing with these things to micromanage in that regard. I think our job is the overall financial and some direction overall, but I don't agree with doing that sort of process.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Khan.
I just wanted to say that you're in the very unique position of having really special expertise in this issue, and so, you know, I'm not saying that we would follow whatever advice you had, but it would be nice to have it.
Representative Cole.
Mr. Chair, I'll pass.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sertich. On page 3 of the fiscal note, down in the middle section there, the assumptions, and it says revenue, a 9% reduction. I guess my question is, in these times of fiscal constraint, in the revenue department, we're asking them to search out sources of revenue, you know, looking under the couch cushions for things. Would it be appropriate to be reducing staff in the revenue department at the executive level?
Mr. Chair, Representative Szymanski, as Mr. Marks stated, these actually aren't what the reductions would be. This is currently the percentages of contracts in these departments. This isn't what it says. And I'm assuming a lot of those contracted services, once again, are in in-state companies for the department revenue. If they're not, I think they should be seriously looked at.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none then, the motion is renewed by Representative Kahn that House File 2690, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No. No.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And Representative Hansen is next. You're welcome. Let's see, Representative Champion, this was before the Transportation Division. Would you care to make any motions?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I move the Transportation Policy and Finance Division report for House File 2116.
Okay, the motion is before us to adopt the division report. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Champion?
I move House File 2116 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Now, there's an author's amendment. Did you want to adopt the amendment so that it's part of your presentation of the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The author's amendment, the A1 amendment, when this was in Transportation Finance, it was a year ago, and we did pass some legislation. So the DE amendment, the A1 amendment, reflects current law, and the credit card portion has already become law. So it would be just updating the bill to the current reality.
Okay, so Representative Champion moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hansen, then on the bill.
Thank you, Mr.
That
Chair.
Kind of is the bill.
Members of the committee. House File 2116, as amended, relates for fees for Deputy Registrar Program. It is a user fee increase of $1.50 for tab renewals and for title work. You should have in your packet a brochure of Deputy Registrars, and I think most of you have probably been contacted by at least one Deputy Registrar in the past year, if not in the past month or past week. There is a, it's a fairly straightforward bill. We have about two-thirds of these transactions occur through deputy registrars, about one-third occur through the state. The fee increase of $1.50 would add to a positive effect on the bottom line for the state because of those that one-third that are being affected through a state program. The fiscal note has a negative cost that was taken care of by the amendment. It was already passed in the, so there is not a negative cost because the credit card portion was passed last year. even if this bill becomes law in about a year, there's a temporary transaction surcharge of $1.75 dedicated to replacing the state's computer mainframe. That sunsets on July 1st, 2012, so even with this user fee increase, you will have a net decrease of a quarter after that surcharge goes off. So that goes to help keep our service in greater Minnesota and in metro Minnesota, and also provide the services for folks to renew their tabs and to do title work.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I had a chance to chat with some of the deputy registrars yesterday in my office. And I was thinking about this bill as I was driving in this morning, and I guess the question I have, I still don't know if I'm a yay or nay on this. I've got mixed feelings about it, but I guess the question I have is, was there any conversation in transportation, or has there been in the past that you're aware of moving from annual registration to at least giving people the option of a two-year registration? Or, I mean, as we talk about reform, as we talk about change, I think one of the things we need to do is be willing to turn everything on its head. And, you know, historically, we've required people to, you know, buy tabs every year. And has there been any conversation about allowing people to, you know, have one transaction every 2 years as opposed to one transaction every year as they do renewal? And what would some of the implications of that be? I mean, I might be more inclined to support something like this if individuals weren't required to go and, you know, have a transaction every single year. And I can say I'm curious if there's been any discussion about that.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Coles, and the transportation finance was a year ago, so I may be a little foggy on that. But if I remember correctly, much of the discussion there was really on the credit card portion that already passed a year ago. I think the changing on the terms, if there are folks who are on that committee could help me, but I don't think we really talked about that. This bill came forward trying to address the need from the deputy registrars. We have situations where there can be closure of that opportunity, so you've got access issues that are out there. But I would be happy in the future to look at some other reform there. I don't serve on those committees, but I would agree with you that we need to look at some type of looking at all the options. But for right now, we have a service and an access issue out there where we have a greater reliance on the property taxes to pay for these services at the local level. If the local level can't provide them, the service can disappear, and then you don't have the access. Or you have less access. So I understand what you're saying. I'd be happy to work with you on that in the future.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I thank you for that. I guess, you know, the concern I have as I continue to think about whether I'm going to ultimately support this legislation or not is, are we simply kind of kicking the can down the road? Are we avoiding the day of reckoning that will come where we're going to require not only us as legislators, but the public as a whole to sort of do a reset on what their expectations are of government and what our expectations are of citizens who have to interact with government? And we're going to have to do that, regardless of who's in control of the legislature, who's in the governor's office, as we look down the line at what's coming our way. Unless we have a major reset all across the board, as legislators, as people within state government, and as citizens, what we expect of and are expected to do as we interact with government, we're going to have to do that reset. And so what I'm concerned about with this legislation as I think about it is, are we just kind of kicking the can down the road again, ignoring the inevitable need to do significant reform and change? And so that's, you know, I'm not necessarily opposed to your bill. I just that's my concern as I think about it. So I appreciate your willingness to work on it, whether it's now or as we move forward, because I think we all recognize, whether we want to admit it or not, we got to stop burying our head in the sand. Yeah. We're going to have a pretty significant reset in terms of all of our expectations.
Okay, Representative Groffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, I'm fine with your bill. We're going to get one of these things in Farmington, so I understand these are self-containing, you know, self-funding agencies. My concern is that
DNRs.
You know, I think a reason why the deputy registrars are having problems is because of guys like me, because I don't buy my tabs in the office. I use the internet. And that's taken away a significant amount of revenue from these offices. And as this process goes on and we have more and more content or more and more behavior of consumers moving towards the internet, more and more people using the state, just using the website to buy tabs, it's certainly going to help out the state. We're going to get more revenue as a result of that. But it's going to put more and more pressure on the deputy registrars. And I'm just wondering, kind of piggybacking off Representative Cole's concerns, long term, we're gonna give them a bump in their expense, in their reimbursement there to fund things. But long term, as we have people going more and more towards the internet, this kind of seems like we're filling in the pothole. And if you just have some thoughts on that,
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, I mentioned earlier we have about a third that are going through the state system or going online. So technology hasn't solved the issue, you know. Or if you're looking at it from a variety of the market providing that service. Now, you may be able to go on at midnight after we're done here and log on and order the tabs. But in some areas of the state, that service may not be available. They may not have the hookup. They may not, and that there are still folks who want to be having that customer service where they know the people that are doing that. They're used to going through there. I think you and Representative Coles are on the same track here of we're going to have to look at redesign on a variety of issues, but right now we have service and access issues that are still there that technology hasn't provided that complete option. It's provided a choice, but it's not provided that complete option. So you still have that need, and you still have that service requirement for folks to make sure that basic things like tab renewals or title work are being done. So I think we need the dollars now. I think that the deputy registrars themselves recognize there is going to be change, but you still have folks who want that personal service and the people who can provide that personal service and help them through.
Representative Garofalo, did you have a follow-up?
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, is that obviously the true cost of operating these offices varies throughout the state. On a place like Dakota County, where you and I are at, they have a little lower total cost of ownership because they turn out more transactions, a little more centralized savings. But in rural areas, there's going to be a higher cost. And do you know, I mean, why don't we just let them charge what they want? I mean, it's a local service; they're providing it. It's kind of an unfair question. What the legislative history is of why we're capping this? Was there an abuse going on where St. Louis County was charging $30 a transaction? Not to pick on my friends from St. Louis County, of course, because Lord knows they wouldn't do that. Maybe like a taconite tax to pay for something. But is there any reason? Do you know what the history is on that, and why we don't let them do what they want?
Representative Hansen.
Chair and Representative Garofalo, I think there's a couple answers to that. One is just the equity and the fairness, where people are going to be having the same fee across, and then also that any fee increase tends to be challenging in terms of passage, and we'll be moving this bill out as a standalone bill, is my understanding. And so I think because the situation is the way it is, we need to be able to put that forward and take the vote, and it's a buck and a half, and that would provide the dollars that are needed, what the registrars and the local governments tell us they need now.
Mr. Chairman, not to belabor this point, I apologize, but I certainly understand that we want to protect taxpayers from overreaching government and making things easier to take money out of taxpayers' wallets. But in this case, if we don't take it, if we don't have people pay the fee, it just comes out of their property taxes. So they're going to, it's not like we're putting cost containment on government or anything. And I know sometimes this place isn't totally logical, so I understand it. But, that's maybe something we could look at in the future, is that if they want to, you know, this would kind of give them an incentive to innovate and modernize, set up video kiosks. Let counties collaborate. Just a thought, but thank you, Representative Hansen.
Okay, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, does this bill solve the issue of using credit cards or specifically Visa cards for payments?
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, I think we solved that last year. There was a provision in the credit card that's dropped in this bill because we passed legislation relating to credit cards last year.
And Mr. Chair,
President Lincoln.
Representative Hansen, that is resolved, so there people are able to. I think there was an issue with Visa not allowing you to want to list a separate charge. That's fully resolved.
My understanding is that's resolved. Okay. Oh, well, I'm told it's still a bit of an issue, but in terms of the statute, we had passed directions, so if the there's still an issue, apparently. I am not sure the details on that. We may want to follow up with MnDOT. But the bill as it is now doesn't relate to the credit cards.
Right. Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Champion renews his motion that House File 605, the first committee in group, or excuse me, I'm on the wrong one. House File 2116 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Now we'll go to House File 605 by Representative Hortman. We almost passed your bill a minute ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
Representative Hortman, or Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, did we move the minutes?
Yes, we did.
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Champion, would you care to make a motion on the House File 605?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move the Transportation Policy and Finance Division report for House File 605, the first committee engrossment.
Okay. The motion to adopt the committee or division report is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Champion.
I move House File 605, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. The motion is before us. Representative Hortman on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we go to the bill, I was wondering if Representative Champion would, on my behalf, move for deletion of Section 9. That is at the request of MnDOT and would remove the position of controller that was provided for in the bill. And it also, by deleting Section 9, removes $130,690 a year from the fiscal note.
Okay, would you care to do that, Representative Champion?
I so move.
Okay, Representative Champion moves to delete Section 9 and then renumber the other section. I guess there's only one more accordingly. Everybody have that motion? Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Briefly to the bill. Following the collapse of the 35W bridge in 2007, we really had to take a hard look at the shared management responsibilities that the state legislature has for the state's infrastructure and our responsibility to provide adequate funding for MnDOT. And what this bill represents is some of the recommendations that came from within MnDOT, the professionals that they hired to do an examination of their policies and procedures, the 2008 Legislative Auditors Report, and then the review that the legislature did itself of the practices and procedures we have related to bridge inspection processes and reporting that comes to the legislature so that we're on top of what's going on within the agency. And I can respond to any questions, but that's generally what the bill does.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Solberg.
Mr. I know that Section 9 has been removed, but I'm looking at the fiscal note in Section 9, and it says that it is assumed that this report could be produced in this time frame using existing MnDOT staff. So I wonder how removing Section 9 has...
I think we need to hear from Mr. Marks. He said there's a mismatch with the fiscal note
okay,
section
very good.
Numbers.
Thank you.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, there's a note up at near the front of the bill, I believe, that there was a section removed, but they left the section numbers in the fiscal note the same. So Section 10 of the fiscal note is actually describing the now removed Section 9 of the bill. And I believe Section 9 in the fiscal note refers to Section 8.
Very good. Okay, thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, then Representative Champion renews this motion that House File 605, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
House File 2600, Representative Mullery. And Representative Hilty, would you care to move the division report?
I would, Mr. Chair, move the Energy Policy and Finance Division report for House File 2600, the First Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hilty?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 2600, the First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and then there's an author's amendment. Would you like the, is that the A10? Would you like that amendment adopted before you explain the bill?
Yes, ma'am.
So it's in the order you'd like?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Hilty, do you want to move the A10 amendment?
I would, Mr. Chair, move adoption of the A10 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the amendment before we vote on it, Representative Mowery, can you explain to me why an employee of a nonprofit organization would be exempt? And yet an employee of a for-profit organization doing the exact same thing would not be exempt from the onerous regulations and requirements in this legislation.
Okay, Representative Mullery on the amendment.
Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins, first of all, you are assuming things that may not be true, that there's onerous things in this. Many people believe, in fact, all of Congress believes that it's necessary to protect people in this country. And so to say onerous things I don't think is correct. However, the basics of, maybe I should explain the bill so that I can explain part of that. I think it would be better to just start off with explaining the bill, Mr. Chair, unless you want it just than this. But it's
well,
hard
that was
to
what I assume, but
it's hard to answer.
Procedurally, he had a question on the amendment, which was appropriate.
Well,
so do you want to? He wants to explain it as part of the bill, if that would be all right, Representative Biskin.
And Mr. Chair, it is. And Mr. Chair, it is some tradition of this committee that we do allow authors' amendments to get the bill in the shape the author would. So I'll be silent. No, I'll vote no on the amendment, but it'll probably go on.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And be sure you do touch on the explanation with the amendment then.
Mr. Chairman, this bill is in accord with a direction from Congress. Minnesota is the only state in the country that did not comply last year with the congressional mandate that we pass this law. It's called the SAFE Act, and it's on mortgage brokers, basically, and anybody advising regarding financing or refinancing or foreclosure on mortgages, and it's to protect the people of the country so that they don't lose huge amounts of their savings or investments. And the fact is that, as I said, Minnesota didn't comply. We are now trying to comply with the federal government. They have assigned to the Housing and Urban Development the regulation of this, and if anything is not like in the Model Act, it is not valid unless it's approved by HUD. And they specifically have a consideration, and they tell me it's going to pass in Congress. There's a Senate bill and a House bill, and this gets into the issue that Representative Biskins raised, and it would only exempt nonprofits doing a certain thing, and it only exempts them who those nonprofits who are handling a certain kind of mortgage and for low income people, and so the fact is that the exemption is probably going to pass in Congress. It's for Habitat for Humanity, basically, and the language in this exemption in A-10 amendment is not officially approved. I've been talking to them quite often lately at HUD. The person that heads up this division for approval of the SAFE Act was not in yesterday when we I tried to find out what would be approved. We had some language worked out between the commissioner's office here and Habitat, and the guy that was there yesterday said that he was pretty sure that the A-10 amendment would be approved as an exemption because it's so narrow. If you notice, it only applies to an organization that is has 0% interest mortgages, and as to the best of our knowledge, the only one that does that is Habitat for Humanity. But we can't go beyond what the federal government is allowing us to do on that, and so even if I wanted to include a for-profit, we could not do that.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Kahn.
As one of the few people on this committee who have actually worked on a Habitat for Humanity's house, I'd like to support this.
No, you're not the only
one. I said few. I just guess.
My wife worked on two or three homes, and it was a group of women.
Yes, I did too.
Okay, I gave you cross the answer then.
No, they were different ones.
They were, I think, all
women build.
Two or three.
Strongly, and I've always, whenever I've been invited, I've sent it out to all women in the legislature, and I know that none of the women on this committee have appeared at any of them. So.
The two or three that she worked on were all
the chase of certain ones, I think.
One in Minneapolis.
35, yeah. But including Lane Cement, which I went
Mr.
over.
Chairman, I put a picture of myself in a legislative report, I think, using a circular saw. And my husband had a fit when he saw that one.
But at any rate,
how could they let you do that?
Chair?
Yeah, that is a very good cause, Habitat for Humanity. I think we all agree with that. Representative Murphy.
Chair, you and Representative Mullery are going to have the opportunity to plant trees this summer.
That's right. Victory Memorial Drive.
Right. So you'll be able to share that experience with Representative Kahn.
We'll take advantage then. We'll invite committee members to help because that's a long drive.
You and
not to the drive, but the drive itself. Okay, we have several that have asked or indicated they have questions, so we best move along. We may not, by the way, members, get through the whole agenda this morning. We're going to run until 11 o'clock, and then there are other things that begin to happen, and we do reconvene tomorrow morning at 8:30. My intent is to continue in the order that the bills are on the agenda, but we will adjourn at about 11 and then just add any that we don't get to today to tomorrow's agenda. So, Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kahn, I think you should know that Habitat happens throughout the entire state, not just Minneapolis. I know you know that, but I want to remind you of that. There's some great stuff happening throughout the state, even in rural areas. You might want to come on down and check it out. Representative Mullery,
no,
you indicated to me that to the committee online or on the amendment that you think that this will only deal with the Habitat for Humanity organization. How do we know that there isn't other organizations out there that are providing 0% financing? I'm just trying to figure out how this is actually targeted toward what Habitat does versus what maybe some other nonprofit or not-for-profit organizations are doing for homeowners.
Representative Mulray.
Madam Chair and Representative Broad, we don't know for sure that there aren't any other, and I personally don't, I would not mind if others were not also excluded from it if they meet all the requirements. And if you'll notice that we do have a certification by the commissioner in there that there is required, and so that the Commissioner of Commerce here would be reviewing them to see that they're acting okay.
And then, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mulray, I'm wondering, why is it that they need to be excluded? Can you help me better understand what is it within the new regulations that Habitat and others potentially do not want to abide by or are not able to abide by?
Anything? Madam Chair and Representative Broad, it was decided from what my, and I can't keep up on everything happening in Congress, my understanding is that the committees in Congress feel that Habitat has a certain type of mortgage that is very simple, and that a person doesn't have to have all of the education for all types of mortgages and refinance and everything for a mortgage which, as I recall, is zero interest, and I believe there's no payments until I think it's they're either sold or they die or something like that, so that it's a very unique mortgage. It doesn't really get people into financial trouble, and so that's my understanding of why they're exempting them.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mulray, I guess I think it fits for the Habitat example, but I'm not sure it fits for other potential organizations that are out there named after things that drop off of trees. But Mr. Chairman and Representative Mulray, my concern is that the Habitat situation is different because you're not talking about a market value that is in terms of the loan to value. Even though it might be 0%, the actual cost of the home is different than the market value of the property. And so I guess I'm a little confused on how this situation would apply to other organizations who are providing a 0% down or a zero down loan that maybe doesn't have, I'm not explaining this very well, the Habitat market value situation is different than another organization who might get an appraiser to come in, appraise the home, and then have a 0% interest or a zero down loan, for example, based on a full market value versus the Habitat homes, which are not a full market value.
Well, Representative Mulray.
Chair, Representative Broad, I'm not quite sure. A Habitat home certainly is full market value. Now, you may be saying the mortgage isn't for
right.
the full market value. But so that can be the case on anything. Many mortgages aren't for the, in fact, very few are full of full market value.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mulray, maybe I'll work on getting the question asked a little bit better for the floor, but it just seems to me that if we're talking about making sure that we're not getting people in loans over their head, I agree that the Habitat situation doesn't do that. I'm not so sure I agree that there isn't another organization out there that it, is not providing loans at specialty packaged loans that don't get people over their heads. And so I'm concerned that this isn't targeted enough.
Representative Mulray.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, that's why we have the certification by the commissioner as protection.
Well,
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mulray, forgive me for not necessarily trusting the HUD on the federal level. I mean, we have Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac who are out there doing all sorts of things that I don't necessarily think were good for the market. You have HUD doing things that aren't necessarily transparent within the market. And so I think from a policy standpoint, it's up to us to make sure that we have our hands around what we're doing on a state level related to the policies for people in the state, not necessarily just punt and say the Fed's got it right, because I'm not so sure they do.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, the reference to the commissioner there is our Commissioner of Commerce, who has been regulating these, and he's regulated the mortgage brokers. By the way, Mr. Chairman, the industry is here, and if you'd let Pat Martin just state their support for the bill. He'd like to.
Okay, that would be fine. We generally don't take testimony per se, but we take questions of expert witnesses, because the bill was in division, was it not?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where the testimony would be taken. But if you want to make a quick statement, that would be fine.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pat Martin. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Mortgage Association, and yes, indeed, the industry does support this bill. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Representative Broad, did you have?
I'll hold my questions for now.
Okay, then Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mowery, you stated your desire to conform with federal law on page 2, line 19. Am I correct in understanding that in federal law, the word at the end of that sentence is "and," while you use the word "or," and that this has been brought to your attention and you're reluctant to change that? Could you explain why?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, because it makes no sense with the word "and." Every state except Mississippi has used. So 48 states use the word "or." Mississippi was one of the first out and used "and." It doesn't make any sense if you use "and," because it would cover almost nobody. HUD is working on Congress to change that word, because it, as they said, it makes nobody would probably be covered.
So Mr. Chair and Representative Mowery, then, by your testimony, the feds didn't get it right, at least in this piece.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Biskins, in looking at the feds overall, they got it right, because the HUD got it right in their model act, and that's what everybody is using, going by, except as I said, Mississippi.
Representative Biskins is... Okay, we have Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's just mainly, first of all, it's always difficult when you're... I think Minnesota does some really good things, and we don't need the feds to, you know, I think if there's another good idea out there, we can use it, that's great. But just to say, well, it's the feds, so we got to do it, is a little bit grating for those of us who are in the Minnesota legislature. But the other thing is that just because someone is licensed, I mean, we have contentious situations where people are licensed and fail. There's no guarantee that people are safe. I mean, I think it's a good effort, and I think there's some things that are okay here, but I just want us to be aware that licensing does not guarantee that. It's still a matter of people and the monitoring and all of those things. We have boards all the time that are taking away licenses and issues with licenses. We have nursing homes that are licensed, and I think it does have a good thing, but just so we understand, it's not 100%, and there are still issues. And so in your bill, does this include then if folks are not complying with licensing, is there a penalty, compliance, variety of other things that make sure that if there are issues? I think I see it on page 12. There's one area here, 1217, violation or failure to comply with any directive or order of the commissioner is a distinct violation or failure. So it appears, though, as there is enforcement authority here.
Representative Mulry.
Mr. Chair, Robin Brown from the department, who has basically written this bill.
Okay.
Can respond.
Yeah, if you can identify yourself, then
we have page 11.
Take the question.
Yes, my name is Robin Brown. I'm with the Department of Commerce. Mr. Chair, Giffmeyer. Yes, the bill does have a provision in there. If there is a violation of the Licensing Act, it's in violation of wrongdoing, the department does have the authority to take administrative actions against a license, such as revoking a license.
Okay.
Okay, Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mullery, how many states have diverted from the Model Act? I know that's kind of the template, but how many have? I think this came up in the Commerce Committee, but I can't.
Chair and Representative Simon, I have no idea. Some states have, and I've been told that there's a number that are out of compliance. And I think since an adult, part of what
guardian ad litem.
They're looking at also is the fact that some of the first states were out of compliance more. As they have published more and more proposed rules, they expect more compliance. And, of course, they expect more from us since we're the last one to do it.
Her husband.
Representative Mallory, how many other states have put in their laws the amendment that you're proposing the Eighth Amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, I don't know of anybody. I know that Habitat has been working very strongly with Congress to get the exemption. Initially, Congress was, I'm told by the head of this division at HUD, that initially Congress was looking at specifically only exempting Habitat, and then they thought it was bad practice to name just one. And so they are trying to narrowly define that. Representative Simon, I really don't know of any other state that has this exact language.
Representative Simon. Just one last question. Of the states, have there been any states that diverted from the Model Act who are still in compliance? Or have all the states who have diverted been deemed out of compliance?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, I've never asked them at that level. And one of the problems is that their enforcement is still being put together, and they have regional offices that look at things and may not flag a problem. And so the national office may not know of it until later, until they're auditing all of them for compliance. That's what the head of it told me, is that they still have glitches in that, because as this is quite a big undertaking, and they don't have a big staff in that department.
Representative Simon, did you have a follow-up? Any further discussion? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mallory. I'm curious, does the National Association of Mortgage Brokers support this bill, and the Manufactured Housing Association? Is there, maybe you could just talk a little bit about who does not support this bill.
Representative Mallory.
Or perhaps they could speak for themselves if they're in the audience.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Pepin, do you know the National Association of Mortgage Brokers? I don't know. My understanding is that they're fine.
The National Association of Mortgage Brokers has testified several times in favor of bills from the company.
Maybe that's a question, and if
Mr. Chairman, the
one of your witnesses,
Mr.
Wants
Martin,
to respond.
Said the National Association has testified many times in favor of these bills. The manufactured housing, I'm told, is trying to get out. Congress has decided that they definitely are in the business of housing and should comply just like anybody else doing the same thing. That's what the head of this division at HUD told me.
Okay. Representative Pepin?
I was just wondering if there's anybody out there that has a feeling on this would like
if
to comment.
If you want to pose a question to them, that would be fine. Okay. Is there somebody representing manufactured housing? I'm not sure if you heard earlier, we take testimony in the divisions, but if you just want to comment in answering directly to the question as to whether you support or do not support the bill.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My name is Reed LeBeau, and I represent the Minnesota Manufactured Housing Association. As to the overall bill, in general, my client's association does not have a problem with it, but we do have serious concerns about the definition that Representative Biskins and I think Representative Simon alluded to earlier, with who is included in taking a mortgage application. And as Representative Biskins noted, there is a very large difference between what Congress passed and what the Model Act proposes to do. If I may, to Representative Simon's question earlier, there are a variety of differences that other states have, ways that other states have deviated from the Model Act, and included different things in the bill, which we've heretofore not been successful in including in the House file. But we do continue to have serious, very serious concerns about the breadth of who would be covered under the Model Act as it's currently being proposed in Senate File 2600.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
There's another gentleman on the same question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matthew Lemke. I'm with the law firm of Winthrop & Weinstein, and I represent the National Mortgage Bankers Association. And I would just echo the concerns of the manufactured housing folks on I'll call it the and-or issue on the taking an application. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Well, seeing none, then, the chair moves that... or renews the motion whereby House File 2600, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Mullery. In case somebody... out of the room, I announced earlier that we're going to run until about 11 or until 11 o'clock, and then any bills that we don't get to on today's agenda will be rolled over and added to tomorrow's agenda. Representative Junkie, and the chair moves the Energy Policy and Finance Division report for House File 3122, the first committee engrossment. Any discussion on adopting the division report? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Junkie?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 3122, first committee engrossment, recommend it to pass and be re-referred to Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and then you have amendment.
First, I want to move the A4 amendment to get it in the shape I need it, and after that, I have an oral amendment.
Okay, any discussion on the motion to adopt the A4 amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
And Mr. Chair, I'd offer an oral amendment on page 11, line 9, delete realtor and put real estate agent.
Ooh.
That's a drafting error. Not every realtor is a real estate agent. Realtor is a professional designation and not a license. So I need to do that.
We have that. Everybody have that then. Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor of the oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what you have in your file for a fiscal note has been updated. It's the latest one since it's come out of the division and reflects a positive income. We made some changes there. Quickly, this is a real estate management appraisal company bill. It sets up a system to regulate these companies. They've been around for a short while, but they're a relatively new entity in the real estate business. And state by state across the country, again in response to the recently occurred real estate meltdown, there's been a lot of looking at who's been involved and who should make sure they have eyes of regulators on them, and certainly real estate management companies are one of those. So this lays out, I've worked with the real estate management companies, I've worked with the appraisers in Minnesota who really were spearheading this, I worked with the Realtors Association, and certainly with the Department of Commerce, and everyone, as we went through division, all these changes that we saw reflected were in discussion with all of those entities, and they're all on board with the language as it sits before you. So really the whole first article basically lays out that that guidance for the Department of Commerce for the most part. There is an Article 2 in the bill which basically talks about the appraisal advisory board within the Department of Commerce and making some technical changes that they and appraisers have asked for going along. So we included that since this is an appraisal bill in there also. But long story short, that's the bill. It's come through many divisions, and there's been no opposition as it's gone along.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Junke. I don't have any particular issues with the bill and all of that, but I think the practical reality is on the federal level and what we've gone through. There were lots of regulations. As a matter of fact, those regulations were put in place as an answer to a previous problem. But when time came, they were not immune from the hype and all of those issues. So just so we understand, this does not mean that all of this is going to cure future ills or necessarily. So how is this going to really make a difference? I mean, if they're subject to hype and the regulators are big time on the federal level for not having used the regulations they had at the time to help stop some of those things that were going on and the fueling that was going on, how do you think this is going to really I mean, this is fine now. We're all paying attention to it. But we're going to have another good time, and things are going to go on. What do you think? Is this going to hold us the next time?
And, Mr. Chair, it seems every crisis does spurn legislation. Right now, appraisal management companies are unregulated across the country, and they're typically very large multi-state companies that basically hire a pool of appraisers, and they set up the work, and they do the payments and collections and everything else, a middleman, if you will, for appraisers. And again, this sets up really on behalf of the real estate appraisers that these companies need to follow the same federal guidelines that are in place for real estate appraisals and appraisers, and they are federal. But you're right. After the farm crisis of the 1980s, which was a major meltdown in the real estate markets, I took a real estate appraiser's test to become a certified general appraiser in 1990. In response to that, prior to that, real estate appraisers were not licensed and weren't, they were licensed. They weren't required to take a test or adhere to federal standards. So you're right. Every time something happens, there is a response. But real estate management companies are a relatively new entity, in part in response to what went on, but in part not just to make sure they're adhering to the same standards that the appraisers they're hiring have to adhere to. And so we think it's very good and directive in that manner also.
Mr. Chairman, I would say that is correct. But I think, as you've noticed, that even in going through all of that, when it came time or when it came down the line, the hype of ecstasy over your increasing property value seems to dissuade people from that. And just so we're realistic about what we think this will accomplish going forward. But I agree with you, especially in appraisers. This is a particular area that has been lagging and relatively new, and that's just fine. But just so we have a realistic understanding of what this really will do in the future.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Junke renews his motion that House File 3122, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Reinhart, 2405, and that'll be our last bill for the day. The other two authors, both of us are on the committee, so we'll add those to the agenda tomorrow then.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move the State Government Finance Division Report for House File 2405, for House File 2577, the first committee engrossment.
No,
2405. I was right, the first. 2405, the first.
Representative Kahn moves the division report on House File 2405, the first committee engrossment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Kahn.
I move that House File 2405, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Reinhart on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This is a bill that would allow for a constitutional question to be put to the voters to address the issue of legislators that are also Guard or Reserve members that might be called to active duty. This is prompted by a couple things. Number one, the increasing use of Guard and Reserve members in our current foreign commitments as a reservist. It's something that I know personally Also, we now have had nationally 25 states, so half the country, adopt some sort of provision along these lines since 9/11 because of, again, the increased use of Guard and Reserve members. And as members would know, there's currently no provision. If you are called to active duty, your seat is just empty. And so the thought behind this is to allow some sort of mechanism by which constituents could be represented until, God willing, the legislator returns safely from their duty overseas. On a fiscal note, when we heard this in Chairwoman Kahn's committee, Representative Pepin asked a good question about the implication for local units of governments around ballot questions. I have talked with both the League of Minnesota Cities and the Association of Minnesota Counties. On first blush, they don't have any objections, but they are both putting together a letter for me regarding ballot questions.
Yeah, I have a question, Representative Reinhart. The word ordered to active duty, what about a situation where somebody has voluntarily joined and their service may overlap a few days of the legislative session?
Mr. Chairman, the intent of this was not to cover a variety of things. It was to actually cover, you know, the thought was, and we've had some discussion on this in previous committees, those members who either are a legislator and then sign up or are a Guard or Reserve member and then run for office, which was my case, know kind of the tension that's going to be there. When it comes into play is when you are sent and don't know you're going to go. You're ordered to active duty. It's not something you were prepared to do. You know, you might go through an election cycle, and you know, your constituents know that you're a Guard or Reserve member, but come July or June 1st of 2011, you receive orders that you're going to Afghanistan. That's not something you can tell folks ahead of time. So the idea was not to cover someone going on their 2 weeks of active duty that comes up every year or having some overlap in training, but actually an unexpected mobilization to, you know, a foreign destination.
Yeah, what I was thinking of, and we're going to be dealing with the constitutional amendment tomorrow, dealing with special sessions, but with or without that, we do periodically have special sessions where a member may be gone, but I guess I'm fine with that. I was just curious because I know there are situations where someone may be on active duty, but it may not have been due to being ordered.
Correct. Mr. Chairman, my
camp
my
during the summer or whatever that might interfere with a special session.
But right. Mr. Chairman, my personal response would be I'm most interested in people that are being sent overseas for 6 or 9 or 12 months. Most, in my experience, most other things can be arranged.
Yeah, I won't belabor the point, but sometimes some pretty important things can happen during a special session.
Agreed, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, but at least you're making a major step in the right direction, in my view. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, call to active duty, is that from the President?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, the way we've structured this is that it follows your orders that come from the federal level.
Okay. Well, is that clear in here? Because
Representative Solberg.
Active duty may also be called by the governor as well.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes. If you're a Guard member, your chain of command flows through the governor. If you're a reservist, it flows through the President. So we've tried to cover both contingencies.
Okay, Representative Colbert.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think you want it narrowly drafted to be able to have somebody that is called to active duty and then to, like, say, sent overseas, I mean, from the federal level. I don't know as if you want it narrowly drafted to be that the governor can call you to active duty and then so have you do things for floods for 3 months.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I personally would like to have that provision because, I mean, I serve in a mixed unit. In fact, Representative Detmer, who's my co-author on this bill, and I are both in the same unit. And so, you know, if he were ordered to active duty, it would be overseas because of the nature of what our unit does. However, I would note that this is permissive. You know, a member can choose to take advantage of this or not. And, you know, if it were, that would not be ever be my case as a reservist. But if I were a Guard member and it was for flood duty in northwestern Minnesota, you know, it's completely reasonable that you could balance both those commitments.
Okay.
Hey, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Reinhart, the question says, asks if the Constitution should be amended to require the legislature enact laws. So if this passes, we come back then and enact the laws. They're not already set in place. There's some guidelines I see, perhaps, and on page 2 and 3, but we would have to actually come back then next session if this was a positive vote and enact the laws.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, that's correct.
Okay, because I think the question Representative Carlson asked was important. I mean, your Air Guard unit up there may only be gone for a 2 or 3 month stint, but it could well be during a special session when you're doing some relatively important work at the legislature. And hopefully when we enact the laws next year on how the succession goes, there'd be the opportunity for those short-term folks also to name a successor to go down to the legislature from their district on their behalf.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, I agree, and I do think that's an opportunity for us to work out some of the details of it. And you do raise a very valid point. Most of the services are trying to narrow the deployments because it's been so tough on morale and recruitment of members. They found that more frequent, shorter deployments are much more acceptable for people leaving their lives and reintegrating back into their civilian lives than one 12 or 18-month deployment and not having it come up again for 5 years.
When we talk about the importance of perhaps a special session, there's another side of that, and at least two of us, Representative Kahn and I, were here when we were tied 67-67. So it might be important for one party or the other to have a majority if there were a special session under that situation. And that's not as rare as you might think. I think the state of Washington was tied at one point. One of the bodies in Iowa very recently was just tied. I went down and testified before a joint House-Senate committee down there. Well, they were tied. They had co-chairs in the one body and then a chair from the other body as a result of their being tied. But at any rate, any further discussion? Oh, Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, I know we're trying to get done, and I'll try to be quick here. A couple questions. Representative Reiner, do we need a constitutional amendment to deal with temporary succession, or is that something that we can do statutorily?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coles, from a legal standpoint, I am told that we do, but not having the legal background, I'm just taking the word of our nonpartisan staff that this is the correct procedure.
Fair enough. I don't doubt that at all. Mr. Chair, Representative Reinert, or maybe staff, the voters of the state of Minnesota, let's assume, pass this constitutional amendment, which then requires the legislature to enact laws. Well, that requires an action of the House, the Senate, and a signature of the governor. What if that doesn't happen? To whom is a remedy owed, and what's that remedy? How do we deal with that situation if the legislature is unable to come to agreement as to what this should look like, or the governor vetoes the legislation?
Representative Reiner.
Mr. Chairman, Mark Shepard shared with me that the process would be that the statute is essentially there on pages 2 and 3 of the bill. And so there is the opportunity to make amendments as it would be adopted, but that is the proposed statute.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, Representative Reinert, final question. Have you given any thought, or should we consider, if we're going to move forward with this, should we consider broadening it to individuals who have a sudden or unexpected medical issue that prevents them from serving in the legislature? I think of the case of, is it Senator Tim Johnson, who had, I think, a brain aneurysm, didn't resign his seat, was not able to serve for an extended period of time in the U.S. Senate recently. Mm-hmm. One could argue that the situation is similar, that if that were me when I fell and hurt myself earlier this session, had I been unable to serve for an extended period of time, but not in a position where I'd be required or would need to resign my seat, shouldn't my constituents have somebody here representing them? If the logic applies for service members, doesn't it apply for other situations as well? I don't know if you've given any thought to that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coles, that's come up along the line in committee testimony, and my motivation in bringing this forward was the folks that I serve with. I'm not opposed to that and would be willing to work on that concept. I think you raise a good point. I mean, the crux of the issue is someone who has an unexpected prolonged absence, but there's every reason to believe they're going to be back and continue. I mean, that's who the voters sent, but you don't want to have the empty seat and no voice being represented. You know, every vote we take is important. So, I mean, that's certainly something I'd be willing to work on, but it wasn't my motivation in bringing this bill forward.
Hey, Representative Winkler.
One question. Why not include constitutional officers? If I remember right, in Delaware, Beau Biden was the Attorney General and was deployed to Iraq. I don't know what they did, and I don't know what would happen in Minnesota in that circumstance, but why limit it just to the legislature?
Ms. Reinhart.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, because I'm a legislator. I'm not opposed to looking at those.
Well, you don't need the
any further discussion? Well, seeing none, then Representative Kahn renews her motion for House File 2405, the first engrossment be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. And as I mentioned earlier, we'll add the last two bills to tomorrow's agenda. And with that, meeting adjourned.